Peter Matheson has been called one of the most intuitive nature writers of the 20th century. A co-founder of the Paris Review in 1951, he has traveled throughout the world and worked as a commercial fisherman and charter boat captain. His body of work encompasses nonfiction as well as 8 novels and focuses primarily on our troubled ecosystem. In 1979, he won the National Book Award for The Snow Leopard. Most recently, he has turned his attention to the plight of tigers, whose numbers have dropped in the century from 100,000 to 5,000 or less by some estimates. Tigers in the Snow explores the efforts being made to save the species and contemplates the impact of their majesty and grace on our collective imagination. I am pleased to have Peter Matheson back on this program. Welcome back.
Morning, Troy.
Great to see you.
Good to see you.
Tell me about this animal first. Just tell me.
Well, let me ask you something. You know, when you were a kid, weren't tigers one of the very first things you were aware of? I was.
Yeah, tigers and lions.
Tigers, the stripes and the claws and the flashing teeth and that color is extraordinarily mysterious. Tiger, tiger, burning bright. And we read those books. There was that book with the un-PC title of Little Black Sambo. Now that's an old change. Right. And that book, by the way, probably spread the notion that tigers also occurred in Africa with lions. Most people think that.
I know they do.
And they don't. I mean, they were in Asia, very, very widespread in Asia, from Turkey, eastern Turkey, all the way to the island of Bali, south through India and north into Siberia. But I didn't know about the Siberia ones. I always thought all tigers were the Royal Bengal tiger that we saw in circuses and zoos. Mm. And then I read in the 1950s or 60s an extraordinary book that was then had been out of print for years. It was called Dersu the Trapper. And it was about the exploration of this part of Siberia on the Sea of Japan and this aborigine man who guided a young Russian geographer lieutenant named Arsenyev. I got so excited, and we got some people together, and we actually, under the Soviet Union, they gave us permission to go on location. At the last minute, they withdrew that because this region is just north of Vladivostok, which was a great Cold War base. But this was probably fortunate for the film goer because they gave permission a few years later to Akira Kurosawa, a great Japanese director. And he made a film, and that film is available at our local Blockbuster Video. It's called Dersu Uzala, Uzala, and I highly recommend it to everybody. It shows you this extraordinary country, 600 miles north and south. It includes tigers, leopards, lynx, wolves, brown bear, black bear. I mean, extraordinary array of mammals there and birds, but and a beautiful coast range next to the Sea of Japan.
Tell me about them, though. I mean, what is
the Siberian,
other than the way they look?
Well,
I mean, other than what we know.
Yeah. Well, the taxonomists have separated tigers into 8 races, 8 geographic subspecies. And it's all one species, actually. It's all one animal. But they do vary. The Siberian in the far north has to deal with big prey, and it's very big. And the Indian tiger is also big because many of those big mammals, you know, moved after the Pleistocene Ice Ages, they moved into the subcontinent there. Those two tigers are enormous, and it's hard to say which is the bigger, but the Siberian looks bigger because he's got much longer hair because of the cold, you know, and he's a little frostier in certain places, but actually looks rather very much like, not quite so orangey, not quite so flame-colored, but massive. You know, one of them in the zoo here, it weighs 857 pounds. That's nearly a half.
This is the Bronx Zoo?
No, it's a zoo up in it's a game farm or a zoo somewhere. I was reading about it. That's nearly a half ton. Imagine a half ton tiger, and that's much bigger than any lion. But otherwise, as the range goes south through China, Indonesia, all the way out into the islands, you know, Sumatra, Java, Bali, there were tigers in all these places, and west, as I say, through the Caucasus into the Caucasus. In my lifetime, 3 of those 8 geographic subspecies have gone extinct. The Caspian tiger around the Caspian Sea, northern Iran, Afghanistan. That was the first. The second was the Bali tiger. No, maybe it was the Bali was first. That was in the 1930s. Then the Caspian, then the Java tiger, which lived up until about 15 years ago.
All from the same cause, poachers? Or
almost always the same cause, poachers, but also destruction of habitat. But the main assault on the tigers took place only 10 years ago, and that's when the Chinese, they've always used tiger parts for traditional medicines. And they encouraged other countries, really, they encouraged poaching in other countries. They'd run out of their own tigers. Their stocks had run out. So they encouraged poaching in India, Russia, Sumatra, Indonesia. And before anybody knew it, these tigers were just vanishing. Mm-hmm. Now it's come somewhat under control, except in India, where it's still very bad. And the ironic thing is there are only about 450 Siberians, as opposed to perhaps 1,500 Bengal Indian tigers. But the Bengal tigers, because of human population growth and impact on the habitat, they're in little islands, maybe 25 to 30 little isolated, discrete populations, but those populations are just being squeezed out like candles, one by one by one, and maybe in 20, 30 years, there'll only be four or five of them left, and those not in great shape. Whereas the Siberian is all in one continuous range. And this group, the Siberian Tiger Project, led by Maurice Harnacker, they're over there, and they're trying to establish corridors between these sections. And they really do have, or they will have, a continuous north-south range of about 600 miles, which gives them a better shot.
So what has to happen to stop this?
Well, the poaching is somewhat stabilized now. It's under control. But the ironic thing was that the three tigers that I worked with over there, worked with, one that I saw, one that we were very close to in the forest, and we were chasing her, and another one that we went down and observed this kill, the three that I felt closest to, all three of them were poached. And that was what was going on in the early 90s. Now, it seems that people are putting money in. There is actually a pretty good warden system going on. I think the local people are better educated. They realize they have something very precious there. And we have real hope that the Siberian population can not only stabilize, but grow. In fact, it has grown in the last 5 years. It's grown a little bit. So that's encouraging.
What's your best argument for them other than their beauty? I mean, what did that they add to?
I think for me, they're the nerve in the wilderness, in that wilderness, wherever they are. They're the thing that really brings it to life. I know I walked a lot in Africa with wild and dangerous animals. And then, you know, the chances are very small that they're going to attack you. But their presence there is so exciting. The whole landscape, you know, comes to life. And in our myth, in our story, Kipling's wonderful stories about tigers, you know. And Jim Corbett, remember the Man-Eaters of Kumaon? Yeah. I mean, that's a thrilling book.
Look at this. Just as you do this. Maurice Hornhacker took this, right?
Yeah. He's got some great photographs there. But you know something? These tigers are tigers that they're in about a 6 or 8 acre enclosure where you can get at them. The wild ones are so wary, they almost have never been photographed.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No sort of human photographer has ever gotten that close.
The only photographs I've seen of them are taken from
helicopters,
or they catch someone out in the open like that. They'll maybe
collar them.
But no, nothing like this. You can't get them. They're warier than the Bengal. I don't know why they are. They're very shy. Very hard to see, even in the wintertime.
Yeah. You're making the efforts to promote tigers as kind of sacred symbols in the Russian Far East that
they're seen that way.
And you want to promote that idea so that the
people will want to protect them. Don't forget, Charlie, you know what a tiger is worth? A man told me the other day, John Seidensticker, who's the curator of the National Zoo, he said the tiger market is so extraordinary. They are now... that they're buying there are 2,000 tigers in Texas. People have all these old zoo spitbacks.
How many?
2,000. It's a herd. I say that. It's a herd that you could have on the King Ranch.
Yeah.
And that tiger you could buy one of those guys for about $500. You can ship it to Hong Kong for about 2,000. And it's fractionalized value, as they say, is $65,000. You see the profit in that? Suddenly, where they're getting
these export sheets.
Yeah, Fish and Wildlife Service has these export sheets. They show 17 tigers going to the Canary Isles. What are they going to do? 17 tigers there.
And they'll ship them on to somewhere else?
They're just being transshipped around, so it doesn't look like it's all going to the Chinese market, you know, but it's through the head of it.
Well, let me just show a couple of pictures. I wish we had more. What a fabulous photograph that is. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
Look at that. If that is not... That doesn't have majesty, I don't know what it is. It defines it, doesn't It's almost like this.
Just think of the earth without tigers. It would be pitiable.
Tiger in the Snow, Peter Matheson, photographed by Maurice Tornicker. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Charlie.
It's always good to see you.
Once again.
We'll be right back. Stay with us.